We have with us live in the studios once again, Jav Parrish and Maria Tomchik, both with Eat This Steak. Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
I'm not hearing Maria, and I don't know why.
Can you hear me now?
There we go.
There we go.
We can hear you now.
Okay.
So, lots to cover, starting with local and the city and Hempfest are friends once again.
Yes, the city and Hempfest settled their lawsuit this week. Last month, the organizers of Hempfest sued the city of Seattle because they had requested a permit from the city to hold Hempfest this year on the grounds of the Seattle Center after the city had told the organizers that they couldn't hold Hempfest in Myrtle Edwards Park this year because of construction of a pedestrian overpass. However, the city came back and said, well, no, you can't hold it at Seattle Center. And so Hempfest took them to court and said, well, you know, this is an annual event. There's no reason why the construction should stop us from being in Myrtle Edwards Park. Why can't we do it at the Seattle Center? In addition, we'd like 3 days this year rather than two. We asked for 3 days last year and you wouldn't give it to us. So this week, the city of Seattle settled and Hempfest agreed to drop their lawsuit. In return, they got all of the things they requested from the city of Seattle.
Funny how that works.
The festival will be held in Myrtle Edwards Park, and it will be 3 days this year from August 19th through the 21st. Yeah, funny how that works. It takes a lawsuit to get things done.
Yeah, and the concern over the 3 days should be familiar to anybody who's been to Hempfest, which is that they were very concerned that the turnout was such at this point that it's so crowded that it's actually a public safety hazard. And the organizers of Hempfest have tried for several years to make this case to the city, and the city has been refusing to give them the permit. So again, they had to take it to court in order to get that concession, which should have been a basic right for anybody who wants to hold that kind of event. It should have been pretty straightforward.
And it's obviously been a very popular event over the years. So mm-hmm.
Otherwise, they wouldn't have the crowding problems. Yes.
Yes.
All right. Well, related to that, the developments this week in terms of medical marijuana.
Oh, yeah. Folks might have seen the front page story in the Seattle Times the last day or so about 35 medical marijuana dispensaries being shut down by three cities in Western Washington over the last month or so. And those cities, Shoreline, Federal Way, and Lake Forest Park, they didn't just arbitrarily decide to shut down medical marijuana dispensaries. They were basically told by the Washington City's insurance authority that they could not and should not issue business licenses to medical marijuana dispensaries because, in their opinion, the opinion of the Washington City's insurance authority, those were not legal businesses and that medical marijuana was an illegal activity. And so those cities, because they couldn't issue business licenses to those dispensaries, then had to enforce the law and shut down any business that doesn't have a valid business license. Tacoma has also done something similar. They've issued cease and desist notices to 27 different dispensaries inside their city limits over the last few months. And this is in spite of the fact that there's a bill passing through the legislature right now with a very high probability of being passed and signed into law that will make medical marijuana dispensaries legal and regulate them.
All right. Moving on, City Council had a decision this week regarding a levy.
Oh, yeah. A special committee of the City Council passed a motion to place a renewal of the Family and Education's levy on the ballot for November for voters to vote on. What I found very interesting about this levy is that it's twice the amount of the old levy. It's a $231 million levy, which will average out to about $124 $124 in taxes per homeowner for the averaged assessed valued home in the city. And what it really reflects, the fact that this amount is twice what the old levy was, really reflects the reality of federal and state governments not adequately funding education. Because here's what the money would go for. Half of it would go for early education in elementary schools, very basic stuff. The other half for struggling students in middle and high schools, again, very basic educational stuff, college and career counseling and training, and health clinics. The very things that have been cut out of just been trimmed completely out of federal and state education monies. Now we've got folks at the local level at the city of Seattle having to pay for it.
Yeah, this is not a surprise, of course. People have been knowing that the levy was going to come up this year, although the size of it might be a little bit of a surprise. But this is the major reason why, if folks remember a couple of months ago when the scandal hit around the small businesses program at the Seattle School District, why the superintendent, Marie Goodloe-Johnson, was let go of so quickly. So quickly, in fact, that they didn't even bother to show cause as to why she should be fired, and wanted to actually give her a year's worth of salary for her termination rather than trying to go through that legal process, which would have drawn the scandal out and kept it in the news. They were very, very concerned that a prolonged scandal would reflect badly on the school district at exactly the year when this enormous levy is going to go before voters. And so they really tried to sweep it under the rug as quickly as they could.
Mm-hmm. All right. Moving on. Liquor privatization.
Yeah, Costco is back. Folks may remember that I-1100, one of the two liquor privatization bills on the ballot last November, failed at the ballot box. Well, Costco has now gone back to Olympia and is submitting a new liquor privatization bill to the legislature. Now, it does differ from I-1100, unlike the initiative that was filed last week by conservative blogger Stefan Sharkowski, one of the authors of 1100, filed a very similar initiative to try and get a similar kind of privatization bill on the ballot this year. But this would go before the legislators in Olympia and is being sold as a cost savings for the state and therefore some kind of a budget fix, even though the revenue from actually selling liquor through the state liquor store system would be abolished. But the difference between this and the bill that was rejected by voters last November is a fairly critical one, which was a very caring response by Costco to the concern that, well, if you pass this bill, you could have hard liquor being sold at every convenience store, every gas station, every little store on every corner. Well, they've addressed this. They've specified in the new bill that only stores of 9,000 or more square feet can sell hard liquor. This being, of course, like big box stores like, say, Costco.
Oh, God.
So there's nothing remotely self-serving about this at all. But it's very interesting that, when
it cuts out the competition for them, too.
Yeah. Funny thing that I'm sure that's just a coincidence. But the thing that's interesting to me about this is if this gains any traction in Olympia, why is it that when voters approve, say, a Tim Iman initiative, that even though it might be, blatantly unconstitutional, like the two-thirds requirement, it's considered sacrosanct by the state legislature? Even if it's overturned by the courts, the will of the voters cannot be defied. But it's the will of the voters for something that's bad for business, then it can be ignored. Or if it's the will of the voters to, say, fund education, then it can be ignored.
All right. Moving on. The Washington State Senate making a decision in terms of basic health.
Yeah. The State Senate approved a bill which is already approved in identical form by the House. So therefore, really all it needs to do is to be signed into law by Christine Gregoire, which it will be, cuts about 20% off of the rolls of the basic health plan this year. What it would do was reset the eligibility requirement at 133% of federal poverty level rather than 200% of poverty level. And now federal poverty level for a family of three is only about $18,000 a year. So if you can imagine trying to feed three people on $1,500 a month, that exactly is, if you have, say, $1,803 a month, you would no longer be eligible for the basic health plan. That cuts about 12,000 people off of the 64,000 people on basic health plan. And now remember, much of the Washington population is in the Puget Sound region, which has a higher cost of living than the federal average. So it's actually even higher, harder for people to make ends meet on that kind of money here than it would be in many parts of the country.
Yeah, and when you talk about poverty level too, that's gross. That's not net. So you're talking about people's gross income before taxes are taken out. When you talk about your income after taxes are taken out, then it becomes extremely hard to feed a family, to clothe them, to cover rent, to cover transportation expenses, to cover health care. It's just not possible. And so cutting these people off of basic health plan is going to dump them into emergency rooms all over the state. And it's just going to be more of a burden on the taxpayer.
Yeah. Meanwhile, the state legislature is trying to figure out whether and if so to what extent to fund Disability Lifeline. Right now, it looks like Disability Lifeline will be salvaged, but that the cash stipend for Disability Lifeline will be taken out. In other words, people will still be able to get food stamps, but they won't be able to get cash to actually live on. These are people who are not eligible for federal subsidies and who are, because of reasons of disability, are unable to work and don't have any other means of income. These kind of cuts are going to literally result in the deaths of a lot of people.
Yeah, deaths are, and an increase in homelessness, an increase in crime, all, you know, and again, a flooding of hospital emergency rooms because people will be ill and literally have nowhere else to go, particularly people who don't have a place to live anymore.
So the deal is that it costs more for society, but it costs less in this particular budget year.
Yeah, essentially.
All right. Moving on to national and President Obama perhaps looking at a review of some of the nuclear facilities.
Yeah, this week in response to the disaster in Fukushima, President Obama ordered a review of the United States' nuclear reactors. And when I heard about that, my first question was, well, what about spent fuel? Okay. I mean, every installation in the United States that has a nuclear reactor has the problem of spent fuel rods. And most of those facilities, if not all of them, have chosen to store their spent fuel rods in pools of water nearby the reactor.
And, which is exactly the problem at Fukushima.
Which is exactly the problem at Fukushima. And in fact, they've been encouraged by the federal government to do this because nuclear reactors are heavily guarded from terrorist attacks. And the idea is if the spent fuel rods are kept within that same guard perimeter, then they're relatively secure. However, there's every indication that the worst problems at Fukushima have been relating to those pools of spent fuel rods. Here in the U.S., we not only have the same problem with spent fuel stored in pools nearby reactors, but we also have very, very crowded pools. We have a total of 71,862 total tons of spent fuel now stored in this way. And the amount is growing by 2,200 tons every year. The pools here in the U.S. contain about four times the amount of spent fuel that they were designed to hold. In other words, you have a lot of overcrowding in those pools. If there's an accident, if there's a disaster, doesn't even have to be close to what Japan experienced to be a problem and for radiation to leak. So that my question is, okay, great, review the reactors, but what about the fuel problem, the spent fuel problem? The spent fuel will always be a problem when it comes to talking about nuclear power. It will always be there. It will always be the main issue that you're going to have to deal with.
Well, then we should privatize the sale of it. Oh, wait.
Moving on, radiation levels here in the U.S.
Oh, yeah. I know that everybody's been hearing that the radiation levels that have been detected here in the U.S. are safe. You know, they're compared to levels of background radiation all the time in the news. And it's really given the news media the permission to stop talking about the disaster in Fukushima because what is there to worry about? And so we've seen Japan articles about Japan and the nuclear issue fall to the back pages of the international news and be barely mentioned at all and in terms of national problem here in the U.S. But this week, Heart of America Northwest sent out a press release saying that, look, these levels of radiation that they're talking about, that U.S. government agencies are talking about and comparing to levels of background radiation are not, they're actually higher than you're being led to believe. Current reported levels, this is reported levels in Japan, would lead to over 5% of adult Japanese residents within about 13 miles of the reactor will die of cancer. Children have a 3 to 10 times more higher susceptibility to that radiation, and so do adult women. So if you look at that 5% of the population within 13 miles of Fukushima will die of cancer based on the adult male population, and you say 3 to 10 times that for children, well, 10 times 5%, You're talking about a 1 in 2 chance that your child will die of radiation.
Yeah, although to be fair, there hasn't been an evacuation within a 12-mile perimeter.
Yes.
And that's why.
Yes, whereas the U.S. government has warned U.S. citizens in Japan to stay outside of a 50-mile radius from the reactor. The measurements here in the U.S. of radiation, and now remember, the prevailing winds that have been blowing from Japan have come in our direction, not south, not west, but east, towards the United States. Those levels are based on radiation safety standards set by the Department of Energy and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, both government agencies that are tasked with promoting and helping the nuclear power industry succeed. The EPA, on the other hand, sets much, much lower standards. And the annual background radiation levels cited by the Department of Energy are about 2 to 3 times higher than normal background radiation levels. So you have to be very, very skeptical about these reassurances that you're getting from the Department of Energy and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission.
Yeah, it was a very amusing story in the New York Times earlier this week about how the criticism of Tokyo Electric and Japanese government officials for equivocating on some of their warnings and not giving enough background information and so forth. That was all down to Japanese culture, which is very conflict averse and doesn't like to acknowledge problems like that. Not like, you know, say American nuclear power regulators or power officials at Three Mile Island or Soviet officials when Chernobyl happened. They did not. They, oddly enough, acted just the same way, but they must have been affected by Japanese culture, too.
Mm-hmm. All right. Moving on. April 8th, coming up here pretty quick. And how does that relate to us here?
Well, that is the new date that's been is in Congress right now for the government to shut down the latest continuing resolution for the 2011 budget. Only went for 2 weeks until April 8th. And according again to the New York Times today, the negotiations that have been going underway between Democrats in the Senate, Republicans in the House to try and figure out a way to extend that further have pretty much broken off, and they're not talking at this point. So it's looking very likely that on April 8th, the federal government is going to shut down, and then it will become a blame game with Republicans blaming Democrats and Democrats blaming Republicans as to why the government shut down. Republicans demanding a certain level of budget cuts from the government, Democrats refusing to go along with the specific things that the Republicans are cutting, although they're quite notably not contesting the overall Republican frame that the budget needs to be cut and we're spending our way into blah, 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 blah. So the Democrats are not really contesting the overall idea that the government is wasteful and is spending too much money, but they are contesting what the Republicans want to cut. Meanwhile, of course, we're funding a brand new war in Libya and seem to have enough money for that. But random observation there. But The net effect of this is that at a time when 3 wars are being fought, at a time when there's a nuclear catastrophe in Japan, at a time when there's record continuing unemployment in the United States and the economy has continued to struggle, this will be a perception to make the economy that much worse. And nobody in Washington, D.C. seems to care particularly.
3 wars?
3 wars, yeah. Yeah, we're still fighting in Iraq.
Yeah.
Yeah. Iraq, Afghanistan, now Libya.
But there's Pakistan.
There's Pakistan. Yeah.
Well, yeah. And there's Pakistan. That's 4.
And then we've been heavily involved in Yemen and Somalia as well.
Yeah. So you can make a pretty good case for 6, actually.
Yeah. Or
and then there's you know, a few more smaller wars.
You get
wars
a discount if
other.
It's a baker's dozen. All right. Yeah. Let's move on then to international, starting with Japan.
Yeah, again, in Japan, as I made the point earlier, radiation levels are obviously higher than what the Japanese government and the Tokyo Electric Power Company are reporting. When the government this week announced that radiation in the Tokyo water supply was double what was allowed for babies, even though prevailing winds were blowing away from Tokyo, nuclear experts around the world scratched their heads and said, well, the amount of radiation that the Japanese government has been reporting from the reactors wouldn't lead us to believe that that should be the case in Tokyo, that you would have high radiation levels like that in the water. And so experts then finally had to admit, my guess is that the Japanese government either doesn't know how high the radiation levels are or they're not reporting it. accurately in order to keep people from panicking. Nevertheless, it led to panic in Tokyo as people bought up supplies of bottled water. Also, the food supply, it became clear, is becoming contaminated in Japan. And in addition, radioactive water has flowed into the Pacific Ocean. And that probably means one of two things. Either reactor containment has ruptured at one or more of the plants, and we got some confirmation of that this week. Or the pools of spent fuel rods are leaking or have been leaking for some time now, and water's been making its way into the Pacific Ocean. That also means that the food supply, in terms if you eat any kind of seafood, the food supply is also becoming contaminated, not just off the coast of Japan, but that water is carried through currents up into the Alaskan fisheries. So much of the seafood we eat here will become contaminated from the nuclear accidents in Fukushima. And there's now a new worry in Japan as well. Salt is collecting in the reactors and the spent fuel pools. As the seawater that's been poured into them is boiling away, it leaves the salt behind. The salt is beginning to displace some of the water, and it may also be encrusting the fuel rods, which means it's going to be very, very difficult to pour more water in to keep them cool. If the fuel rods heat up because of this problem, they could go through further melting and could eventually catch on fire. That's the new worry, which is why the Japanese government and Japanese media are talking so much about trying to get the fresh water cooling system going again. That's how they discovered this week that there was probably a rupture at Reactor 3 when workers were trying to restore the fresh water cooling system, and a group of workers stepped into a pool of water at the plant and were burned from the radiation in the water, which was 10,000 times the level normally found in coolant water. They could only theorize then that, God, the reactor must be ruptured.
Yeah, and there's a possible breach in probably at least three of the plants. Number two, they're talking about a possible breach also, which would, again, mean larger radioactivity releases probably into the groundwater. Of course, there's another new worry now also, that being that a giant lizard will emerge from the ocean and threaten Tokyo. But in addition to that, the death toll from the overall disaster, the earthquake and tsunami that caused the nuclear problems as well, is now the official toll is now over 10,000. The final estimate is going to be that it's about 18,000 once you factor in the people that are now missing that they don't expect to be able to find alive. This is now the costliest natural disaster ever, and the estimate for how much that will cost, about $300 billion. In other words, about one-tenth of what the United States spent on the war in Iraq.
Yeah, yeah. And I just want to point out, a lot of people have asked me this week, what do you do, you know, when, you know, something like this happens? What can the average person do? Well, I usually, you know, if they have worries about radiation poisoning, I just tell them, look, it's not that bad right now, because and you can't reassure anyone about the future, because we just don't know. This is unprecedented in history, this kind of an accident at a nuclear power plant, this kind of a problem at a nuclear power plant. So we don't know what the future looks like. But right now, it's not that bad. Although, if you're thinking about your health, it would be a good time to become a vegan, a vegetarian, because radiation...
No, vegan. You want to avoid dairy.
Yes, vegan, if at all possible. Because this is true not just for radiation, but also for pesticides and other chemical contaminants and heavy metals, et cetera, that they do accumulate in the flesh of animals that eat other animals or that eat a lot of vegetables like grass, et cetera. It does accumulate in the muscle tissue of these animals. So radiation, you would get a higher dose of radiation from, say, eating a chunk of salmon out of the fishery near Fukushima than you would from eating soybeans, for example. So now would be a really good time, if you've ever thought of becoming a vegan, of giving it a try. But also, I think more importantly, people should be contacting the Obama administration. Be calling up the president, sending him email saying, what are we doing about this? Because this is a worldwide problem. This is not something just isolated to Japan. It's going to be a problem that we all have to deal with, and it's going to be more important than the situation in Libya for the long term. And if we can get together with other nations to do something about that, maybe we should be putting our energies towards this as well.
Yeah, and if you're concerned about, you know, large scale effects of large radiation releases, next month, the 25th anniversary of Chernobyl, and when we get to events in another 5 minutes or so, we'll talk about a presentation that's coming up on what those effects were.
All right. Yemen.
Yeah. Yemen. Yeah. In Yemen this week, there were major protests last week, and the government clamped down pretty hard, killing a lot of protesters. And over the course of the past week, a number of diplomats within the government and a number of military folks high in the military in Yemen have deserted the government and said that they will no longer support the Yemeni president. They will stand with the protesters. And so it looks like the Yemeni government may be on the verge of falling soon. The question is, what will replace it?
Yeah. And in Syria, about 100 dead in the southern town of Daraa after men were arrested about a week ago for anti-regime graffiti. And as of yesterday, there was gunfire against protesters in six cities. And it's been very interesting. It's been very similar to Tunisia, whereas in the rural areas like Daraa, it's been poor farmers and shepherds that have been protesting against the Assad government. In Damascus, the capital, it's been the upper middle class. And so you're getting pretty widespread protests in Syria as well.
Yeah, and a very different response to the two groups, too. The government of Syria didn't have a problem bringing out the live ammunition against the poor protesters in places like Daraa. They, however, were a bit more restrained in dealing with the upper middle class folks protesting in Damascus.
And finally, Ivory Coast.
Yeah, the UN High Commissioner for Refugees saying this week that up to 1 million people have fled their homes in Abidjan, which is the largest city in the Ivory Coast, after fighting there has erupted between pro and anti-government forces. This when the president there, who was ousted in the November election, has been refusing to cede power despite pressure from the international community and other African nations. The humanitarian crisis in the Ivory Coast has not gotten near the attention or near the response of the various revolutions in the Middle East, and not nearly the attention in U.S. news media as well, but it's actually affecting far more people.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, in the Ivory Coast, it's simply a matter of can a nation peacefully change governments after an election. And this is a situation in which you would expect the international community to really get involved and say, look, this is a basic right of democratic and free people to have a peaceful changeover of government. However, there's been very little attention paid to the Ivory Coast.
All right. Did we cover Libya?
No, not yet.
Go.
Okay, 30 seconds on Libya. Nobody will take responsibility for who's actually commanding the intervention. And now it looks like NATO is going to take full command of enforcing the no-fly zone. The Arab League has at least rhetorically withdrawn its support from the Western intervention of Libya. And there's no clear idea of what the end game is. The rhetoric that you would be listening to from France and Britain and the United States suggests that even though they're denying it formally, that regime change is really what the operative goal is here. But that's not going to be possible simply with bombing and enforcing a no-fly zone. So what happens if Gaddafi stays in power? For that matter, what happens if he doesn't stay in power? Nobody seems to know, and nobody seems to be taking responsibility for answering that question.
All right. Well, then that leaves us with events, which we have a few this week.
Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, today there's going to be a rally for the right to know what's in your food today at noon at Victor Steinbrück Park.
Mm-hmm. And then Monday night there will be an event at Kane Hall, which we had mentioned before, an expert talking about the health impacts of the catastrophe at Chernobyl 25 years ago in 1986. And then on Tuesday night, You want to talk about
Heart of America? Tuesday night,
Hanford?
Heart of America is visiting the there's a Hanford State of Sight meetings at the Seattle Center Northwest Rooms at 7 p.m.
These are annual things.
These are annual events where Heart of America Northwest and other citizens and other citizen groups get to listen to the officials talk about what's going on at Hanford and ask them serious questions. I think that would be a good thing to go and do.
Yeah, those are always
So 7 o'clock is the public hearing. Before that, at 6 o'clock, Hanford, Heart of America, rather, hosts an open house at which they give briefings to people to bring them up to speed on what government officials should be saying and good questions to ask.
Mm-hmm. And the Monday night event on Chernobyl, I believe, starts at 6.
Okay. Oh, no.
Okay.
So now you got your week planned.
There you go.
Wednesday, you're on your own.
Talking as we do every week with John Parrish and Maria Tomchik, both with Eat the State. And where do people find Eat the State?
Eat the State is on the web at www.eatthestate.org with opinions and humor and comics and news stories and a blog and all everything. Well, not everything you need to know, but a lot of it. www.eatthestate.org.